You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst of friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this special bonus episode of the podcast is Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing wonderful. We got another dumping of snow last night here in the Great White North, but we're all recovered and unplowed and de-iced, and I'm ready to go.
Good. I have you today because you are kind of our NFBC guy at the website, and today we were talking all NFBC kind of topics with a special guest, Greg Ambrosius of NFBC. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing good, but I'm also digging out of snow as well, so I think I'm same as Chuck, not loving it at all.
Well, I'm in California, so I feel bad for you guys.
Well, it's going to be -9 here tonight, so I hope you're enjoying it out there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's been a little rainy, but that's nothing compared to what you guys have to deal with. So I empathize with you, but not that much.
I empathize with me myself.
Greg, why don't you tell people where you can reach on social media if they want to reach out to you, and then kind of give an overview of what you do at NFBC.
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at Greg Ambrosius. That's AmBrosius. And you can reach me at Greg@sportshubtech.com. I started the NFBC in 2004. In fact, I'm so old in this industry. I started in 1989. I was the editor of Fantasy Sports Magazine. It was the industry's first national newsstand magazine. So around 2004, I came up with this idea to do a high-stakes baseball game, and I wanted to make it kind of tough, so I created a 15-team format. I don't think that had ever been done before in this industry, 5x5 rotisserie, with a $100,000 grand prize. And it was a leap of faith for myself and the company because we had never done games before. And, of course, the first year we lost our asses, and thankfully the company decided to come back for the second year. We sold out the main event in the second year, and now we're in our 14th year. It's just been a nice success. National Fantasy Football Championship, same thing. We went with a 14-team format. Most leagues were 12-teamers. So we try to make it difficult. We wanted deep player pools so that skill outweighed luck. And for the last 14 years, like I said, both of these contests have continued to grow. We've given out over $37 million in prizes since 2004. So really looking forward to 2017 as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to 2017 as well, and I'm looking forward to talking to you because this is going to be my first year playing in an NFBC league.
Welcome.
I'm very interested to see how it will go and kind of get some tips from you and Chuck in terms of what the hell I should do. So let's jump into the first questions. How did you come up with the base format of NFBC leagues and the Kentucky Derby-style draft slotting in particular?
Yeah, like I said, I started out as a 15-team format. You know, when I was doing the rules. I just thought there's 30 teams out there. Let's use half the player pool. And that's really why I did it. And our guys really have embraced this 15-team format. They love the depth of it. You really have to know the player pool to do well in our 15-team format. But after a couple of years, I heard back from our players who said that they wanted a little bit more input when it came to even draft spot selections. If they were picked first out of the hat, why did they have to take the first pick? Not everybody wanted that. So that's really what Kentucky Derby is. That's what they did in the Kentucky Derby. Some horses don't like going against the rail. Some like being outside. And when they pick the numbers, that's their trainers moved them to one side or whatever. So we do that as well. We randomly pick you out of a hat, and then we allow you to pick where you want to draft. And more people are happier now. They have their strategies ahead of time, and they're picking from spots that they can form their strategy and win from, rather than me just picking their name out of a hat and having 15 people all hate their draft spots. Now at least half of the people like their draft spots.
And it's actually a really great format. It's something I have incorporated into a number of my leagues that I commission. Mm-hmm. Because some people want the back end of the draft. Some people want to be in the middle. They don't want to be stuck on a corner. So it's a really, really great idea. Is there a particular draft spot that has more winners than others?
You know what? Interestingly, over 13 years, the answer is no. 2 years ago, Greg Morgan won the overall $125,000 from the number one spot. Last year, Rob Silver won it from the number 15 spot. So, I mean, you can win it from either any place. Lindy's won it from 14. He's won it from 11. So honestly, no. And the reason being is because you can draft Jonathan VR in round 24. You can draft Rick Porcello in round 18. You know, you can find Aaron Sanchez on the waiver wire, Mark Trumbo in round 12. So certainly the draft spots play a role in the first three rounds, but in baseball after that, I mean, these players are all available to everybody drafting at any spot.
Chuck, have you found any success drafting in certain spots rather than others?
Well, I think the expansive format and what you run into with runs, I think certain draft areas are better suited for different types of players. I do think that if you're going to draft on the end, you're going to have to anticipate a little bit more about what's going to happen in front of you. But I do agree with Greg in general that, you know, you spend a lot of time worrying about the first three or four picks. But as a generality, almost all of those players are pretty good unless they get hurt. Majority of the leagues seem to be won or lost well after that, like in the 10 to 25 rounds. Really happens. That's where the magic happens, or it doesn't happen a lot of the time.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with you, Chuck. There are a lot of people who like to be in the middle of the draft order. When you see KDS, it's not uncommon to see 8-7-6, something like that, because some people do not want to be on the ends. They don't like that. Some of the veteran guys, they do like being on the ends. They love having those two picks in a row. And they jump players. So like you say, they know they're not going to get another spot or pick for 29 more picks. So they may jump a player around earlier than he probably goes in other drafts.
With leagues starting as the World Series ends, have you noticed a trend in what month the overall winner comes from? Is there a big advantage of drafting early?
Well, the draft champions leagues that we use, and like you say, we start those right after the World Series ends, and we continue them right up through April. Really, a lot of these early drafts are filled with veteran owners, so they're very difficult leagues to win the overall from because these veteran owners are really trying to learn the player pool. Yeah, there's a grand prize in our draft champions, but I think these guys who are drafting right now are really trying to learn the player pool, maybe win their league title. But the overall champion most likely will come from a February or a March drafter, see, because just a lot happens between now and the start of the season. But guys are not complaining to be drafting right now. They're happy to be doing baseball, and they're learning the player pool. They're finding the sleepers. They're finding out where the rookies are going. So they feel like they're doing their research while playing in a contest like the draft champions.
Chuck, what has your experience been with this? Have you found more success in early drafts as opposed to later drafts?
Well, I think I've hinted at you about this before, Justin, that it seems to me like some of the earlier drafts when you have less information, sometimes you can stumble into something you didn't know was going to happen. Like you pick up a really good setup guy and he ends up being the closer because there's a trade or there's this or there's that. But I personally, another side benefit of the draft starting as early as they do is for years now, I've used these NFBC drafts as fuel for my off-season podcasting, meaning that exactly what Greg is hinting at is that, you know, years ago, there was nothing going on in baseball drafting, you know, in the 3 weeks to a month and a half after the World Series. And this way, you know, there's a way to keep your mind fresh and start getting ready for the actual drafting season itself. Most local leagues don't go nearly as deep as these NFBC leagues do. Like, I've noticed, like, you know, I consider my player knowledge to go, you know, 5 or 6 minor leaguers deep for every team. In the last 3 or 4 rounds of these NFBC drafts, I end up looking up players that I did not know existed. And so it's really a way to brush up your overall knowledge. And I know this isn't like a paid advertising kind of podcast, but for people out there that are listening to podcasts in this time of year, if you haven't done an NFBC draft before, I think you're really missing out for exactly the reasons that we're speaking of.
Well, these draft champions, like you say, they go 750 players deep. I mean, you're 15 teams, 50 rounds. So you're definitely going to learn to play your pool when you get down to 750 players.
for newer players like myself to the NFBC format, would you recommend like the long, slow drafts, the draft and hold ones, or a live online draft first?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the live drafts or the online drafts with the national contests and the big grand prizes, those are the ones I would recommend. But if you're coming in for the first time, I mean, honestly, we have satellite leagues, which what those are just private leagues, 15 teams, and all the prize money stays within that league. That's a great way to learn the format, the 15-team format, to learn the free agent system that we have and how we do FAB every Sunday night, how we let you start hitters differently on Friday before the weekend. So there's a lot of different unique rules that we have. I jump into a satellite league for the first time and get used to that. The Draft Champions Leagues, like I say, if you want to learn the player pool, you want to really learn how deep the rookies go and such like that, the Draft Champions is the best way. There's no in-season fab with that. What you draft is what you have for the entire season. All you have to do is fill out your starting lineup. So Draft Champions, I highly recommend for anybody that's very serious about fantasy baseball this year, because you're going to learn an awful lot. You might even win some money in that. So we have a lot of different formats, but check out the satellite leagues and check out the Draft Champions if you're just getting started with us.
All right. So some positions in particular are drafted on higher on average than in other types of leagues, other formats. Are there certain positions in which you should target a little bit earlier than others, Greg?
You know, it's a good question, but I always say this is just a math contest. You're trying to get the best stats possible, the best numbers possible with every single pick. So I really don't look at positions when I'm drafting. I'm just trying to get the best value that I can get on every draft pick. I think back in the old days, you used to look at shortstops and say, you know, there's only 3 good ones here. I got to get one of them, or middle infield is so weak. Honestly, if you look this year, the middle infield is very, very strong. We got so many good young shortstops right now that you're not going to have a problem finding, I think, a good shortstop or a good second baseman. In fact, first base is a little bit weaker than the middle infield, I think. So I'm not looking at positions. I'm really not. I'm looking at the best value that I can get with every single draft pick, and I think I'll be able to fill in all my spots with quality guys if I do it that way. But when you start chasing positions, I think you can get yourself in trouble. Now, that being said, you know, closers is obviously a very tough category. The saves, they change so often. You do have to have a plan on whether you're going to punt saves or if you're going to go in early and try to dominate that category, or if you're just going to get 2 middle-tier guys and try to finish in the middle of the pack there. So I think saves is definitely one area that you got to plan ahead of time.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on these? Do you go after certain positions early, or are you just looking for your best overall value?
Well, I'm the purest form of a tier drafter, as in T-I-E-R, when it comes to NFBC. And it really kind of plays into what Greg is saying. I want to make sure it is a math game, and I want to make sure that I feel like I'm getting good value across the board. I specifically enjoy, and usually I have been in satellite leagues, but I do the draft and hold, and not being able to pick up players during the year, I think that really emphasizes, you know, making different tiers at each position and saying to yourself, okay, you know, how am I going to get the most value out of my team come the end of the draft? If people ask me, you know, who do you like better, you know, Trevor Story or Carlos Correa or, you know, these top four or five shortstops, I always think to myself, honestly, I don't think it matters for me personally, because I'm going to wait and get Aledmys Diaz. I'm going to wait, and maybe if it's my weakest spot on my team, I'll live with Didi Gregorius or someone like there, if I feel like my overall package has been enhanced by me waiting on a position. So maybe I'm a little more position focused than Greg is, but I think he's got the right idea when you say you just have to look at making your overall team the best that you possibly can.
Yep. Okay, Chuck, then how many starting pitchers would you draft in like a draft and hold? Keeping in mind pitchers get hurt a little bit more often, or they have more devastating injuries at least, and you won't be able to pick people up. Is there a certain number of pitchers you target?
Well, my number of pitchers correlates almost exactly with how many position flexible players that I can accumulate in draft and hold leagues. Because then I feel like I have a number of ways that I can get a full lineup out there without having to worry about the fact that we have no fab, we have no acquisitions during the season. As a generality, I'm going to end up with around a dozen pitchers with the hope that I have two or three really strong relief pitchers that I can use on occasion. Greg hinted at this before. These leagues, you can change your offensive players twice a week, meaning, you know, the Monday through Thursday games, the Friday through Sunday games. But your pitchers, the more pitchers that you have, to me, and Greg would be the expert on this, that you can rotate in every time that they have two starts, thinking that maybe you're going to get the extra advantages in the wins category, extra strikeouts, it makes a huge advantage. So the price tag that you see on aces in other leagues, generally speaking, is even higher in this league because you need anchors on your staff. You need strong front-to-back rotation to do well, is what I've noticed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like you say, people are looking at two-start starters in this format here and trying to make sure that they're getting as many innings pitched, strikeouts as they can with their nine-man rotation that they have each week. So, yeah, I mean, there's some guys who will draft up to 20, you know, pitchers between relievers and starting pitchers and rotate those guys in throughout the year. Now, they got to have their offensive guys stay healthy, but I've seen people really load up on the number of pitchers and dominate in this format.
Okay. Is there a relief pitcher strategy that you would employ, or is it best to mine for kind of the next best thing, like a Barclay or an Andrew Miller, or are you going for an elite one early, Greg?
Well, you know what? Whether it's the Draft Champions format or just a regular league format, there's nothing more frustrating than the closers. I just never get them right myself. I'm chasing the wrong guys all the time. When I go after the top guy, he gets hurt. So I think in our format, our guys, you know, like you say, getting the setup guy isn't a bad thing. We saw that last year where we had all kinds of guys become the closers later on, whether it's Betances or Kelvin Herrera or whoever else. We saw a lot of guys move up from the setup spot into the closers role. And while they were the setup guy, they were getting a lot of strikeouts for you, good ERA and whip. So there's nothing wrong with loading up on those setup guys. But again, you only have 50 roster spots, or in a regular league, you only have 30 roster spots. So you just can't do too many of those guys. But without a doubt, a lot of those guys are going to be closers by the end of the year.
Chuck, is that what you do?
It is what I do. I put a high... I'm a guy who waits on closer in general. I'm the guy who wants two guys that I think their jobs are relatively secure, even though they're not elite strikeout and whip type of relief pitchers. And then after that, I look for skill sets within the setup guys. And more often than not, you know, last year I went a little earlier and I took Ken Giles as my closer, but I was saved because I ended up with Jeremy Jeffress, who was drafted who I got five rounds after Will Smith. Yep. So I think Greg is really pointing at the fact that this is like a nebulous cloud that you have with these relief pitchers. Get a lot of strong skill sets and sort of see where it falls, because none of us actually know. No matter how much knowledge we have, guys have to have both the skill set and the opportunity to close, and it's really hard to tell when those things are going to happen. It just is. Brad Ziegler is a guy that I've owned over the years that has helped me multiple years in NFBC, and he always lasts a long time because he's not a shiny Cadillac-style relief pitcher. But guess what? He throws a lot of ground balls, and he ends up in a lot of times being a closer. Nobody's excited about having him on their roster, but when you need somebody in the middle of the season, you're trying to catch up on saves, a guy like that can be really valuable.
Yep.
All right. What about prospects versus steady veterans? I mean, I know people who are going for like overall titles and stuff maybe want a little bit more risk and reward to their roster. But is there a value to taking a bunch of prospects or prospects a little bit higher than you would think, Chuck?
Well, it never surprises me. I mean, when you have 50 draft picks, you know, I'm going to end up, I had Barrios on my team last year. I end up with three or four speculative minor league picks, but there's always a couple teams in my experience in the 15 team format that I think overdo it. I think they end up with, you know, 8-9 minor league guys that some of them haven't even sniffed double A yet. And to me, I think that's a little too speculative. I think you need to play sort of a balancing game on it. Pick four or five minor leaguers that you really like that you think could be a major impact if they come up. And then other than that, I think you can play off the fact that other people are overdoing it. People have a natural tendency to want to be the first person on board with a young quote-unquote stud. Well, you don't know when the player's coming up, and then you don't know if the player's going to have an adjustment period. And I always use Mike Trout as an example. Mike Trout, unbelievable player, perhaps the greatest baseball player ever, on his way to being the greatest baseball player ever. And even his first year was pretty lackluster. He was pretty unusable for a couple months that he was up. So I don't like to over-speculate personally, and I see people in these leagues over-speculate, in my opinion.
What about you, Greg? Yeah. Are you a guy who's willing to take some shots on some prospects, or are you a little bit more safe?
Well, yeah, I'm more safe, I think. I've seen too many guys go too much on the prospects, and you know, there's no given that these guys are going to succeed. Baseball is a very, very tough sport. I mean, Byron Buxton's a perfect example here. We've been waiting for him the last couple of years, and you know, now he had a good September, and everybody's all over him. He's been going much higher than I expected in drafts right now, but you just never know. They just are not a guarantee. So I definitely go with – I'll tell you one thing. I'm not drafting already injured guys. Baseball, they get injured enough during the season. So I'm not doing the Matt Harvey's coming back from surgery anymore. I'm going with the healthy guys right from the start and hoping that I can make through a season. And, again, I do want upside with my younger guys, but I'm not reaching for these guys. I think you can reach too early in the drafts and miss out on proven veterans when you do that.
Justin, did Greg say that or did I say that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, you sounded exactly like it was Greg's voice, but somehow Chuck was saying that. That is like Chuck's biggest mantra right there.
When they're hurt already, I don't want to draft them. I mean, I know they're going to get hurt during the season, but a lot of guys think, he's going to bounce back. And it's very possible that you got a bargain from a guy who's bouncing back from injury, but it's also a possibility he's going to get hurt again.
All right. Let's talk about one of the newer league formats that you guys have, because I think it's a really cool, different game than really you can find anywhere else, and that's the Cutline Championship game. Can you explain that and maybe some strategy points around it?
Yeah, you know what? Optimal scoring leagues in fantasy football are really, really popular. Those are really draft and holds, where you just draft a team and the computer picks your optimal scoring lineup each week. Well, that was never done in baseball before, and the reason why is because we have a 5x5 roto, and it's very hard for the computer to pick who's more valuable to you that week, the guy who got three saves or the guy who got two wins for you. So what we decided to do was come up with almost a DFS format where we did a point system based on a point for a single, you know, and two for a double and that kind of stuff, so that now the computer would know at the end of the week, who was your most valuable shortstop, who was your most valuable pitcher. So this is a optimal scoring lineup league. This is our least intensive league that we have in the NFBC. You draft a team of 38 guys, and each week the computer is going to pick your optimal scoring lineup based on the week's results. So you just sit back and relax after draft day. We do have two fab periods during the year. That's it. Only two fab periods. So it's really a way for people to draft every single night to really not have too much to worry about during the season, because the computer is going to take care of everything. And I'll tell you what, it was a huge success last year. We had 1,450 teams in our first year. We gave out $40,000 grand prize. This year it's up to $50,000. I think a lot of people want to draft every night. It's cold in the wintertime and you got nothing to do. Why not just jump into a cut line championship? You can finish a 38-round draft in less than 3 hours, and then you sit back and just watch that team perform or not perform.
Oh, I like the thought process, because I'm a guy who plays in a ton of leagues every year, so anything I can lift the kind of the burden off of the day-to-day management is pretty nice. I think I, on top of just maybe a draft and hold league, I think I'm probably going to do a cut line one. Do you have any like pointers? Because I'm not a points league guy. I do play some DFS. Any pointers in terms of how to draft and go about the strategy of that?
You know, the scoring system is set up so that it is really a 5x5. You'll notice that even stolen bases are given enough credit here to be just as valuable in this format as in the Roto format. So I wouldn't change anything. Again, it's just you don't have a lot of free agent pickups, so make sure you got enough starting pitchers to get through this. Don't speculate too many young guys, because again, you got a limited roster of 38 spots. So other than that, though, this is again another math game. You just want the most points possible. So every pick, get a value on every pick if you possibly can.
All right. Well, that'll wrap us up. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and good luck to you guys this baseball season.
Definitely. Again, give yourself a kind of a plug on where people can reach you on social media, and then anything else from the NFBC you want to plug.
Yeah, at Twitter, I'm at Greg Ambrosius, and again, that's AmBrosius. I'm at Greg at SportsHubTech.com, and our site is NFBC.SportsHubTech.com. And check it out. I mean, we've got $100,000 grand prize in the online championship, $125,000 in the main event, $28,000 in the draft champions. So we've got five different national contests that you're going to really like. And again, we also have the private satellite leagues if you just want to play those. So we've got something for everybody, very intense or just draft and holds. So check us out and enjoy the baseball season.
And then you can reach Chuck on Twitter at Just Chucking It. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. And if you do, it'll get you entered into one of our listener leagues or eligible for other prizes later on in the off season.
Can I have one more note for Greg? Your man Tom Kesenek, who helps you with the leagues, I just want to give him a shout out, because he is an excellent follow on Twitter. He does a lot of excellent work. Every time I've ever had to get in touch with him about anything, he gets right back to people on it. So if Tom, my perception is he's your right hand man.
Yep.
If he's your right hand man, you pick the right guy. He is an excellent person for what you have him do.
Well, appreciate it, and customer service is number one with us, so good to hear that.
All right. Well, that will wrap us up. For Greg, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening, and have a fantastic baseball season.